welcome Colin on distributed work using Tickle.
Hi.
Enjoy, folks.
Okay, I want to talk about one approach to trying to do distributed programming with Tickle. There are lots of ways of doing this, of course, but I thought this is quite a neat little thing, so I wanted to talk about it. Lots of stuff can be done on a single computer, but there are problems where that just isn't enough, and you need either multiple computers because you need more processing power, or because something about the problem itself is inherently distributed. You need to have some bits of it here and some bits of it over there, and or maybe the machines have particular properties, or they need to coordinate to get the job done. So that comes up quite often in practice. But that then brings a whole lot of problems about how do you get these components to talk to each other and cooperate in a sensible way. As I said, there are lots of frameworks that try to solve that problem, but at least those that I've come in contact with tend to be fairly complicated to set up and quite easy to get things wrong. So these are the kind of issues that you need to deal with. When you've got a problem which is split into multiple processes running on multiple machines, they need to be able to talk to each other, so they need to know where each other, where the others are. Need to be able to find them and talk to them. But that's not necessarily a fixed relationship, because sometimes you have problems where it starts off small and then it grows, and you might want to add more processing capability. But you don't want to have a really complicated reconfiguration so that the stuff that's already there can find the stuff that's new. So it's nice to be able to sort of add stuff or subtract stuff as you go along without having a really complicated configuration process to go through. Also, quite often if you're doing some task for some client, there's another client that wants the same thing or wants the same results. You don't really want to repeat the work, so very often it makes sense to save stuff in some kind of cache so that stuff which is needed more than once doesn't have to be regenerated more than once. As I say, there are lots of existing ways to tackle this, but what I've been putting together is a way of using the Redis database, Redis database system, to handle these kind of properties in what I think is a relatively straightforward way, anyway. So now I want to try and, before I go into the details, I want to try and do a little demonstration, and then after that I'll kind of dig into what's happening. Okay. Now, it's a bit tricky to give a demonstration of a sensible distributed system on a single laptop. It's also a bit tricky because this kind of problem, this kind of solution only starts to make sense when you've got a relatively complicated problem. But if the problem is too complicated, then you can't really present it sensibly in a short talk. Here, as an example, I'm going to use the simple the fairly well-known example of generating a Mandelbrot set, which is something that's fairly well-known, needs quite a lot of processing to do. So there's a nice little program to do this on the wiki. So this is the existing program. I'm just going to run it pretty much as it comes. Because it takes a little while to generate, it does it in four passes where it interleaves the... the vertical strips. And when it finishes, it tells you, helpfully, that it's taken 21 seconds to do it. Now, let's just... So now, this BG. I'm going to try the same thing with a version which is modified to split the work over multiple machines. Now, this depends on a lot of things, a lot of other things working correctly. So it's a bit dodgy as a demonstration. But anyway, Now what happened? Wait a minute. We've lost the connection again. We had this earlier. Sorry.
Yeah, we lost the connection, exactly. Should be on.
Okay, right. Okay.
Yes, you should have it again.
Right, let's try that, thanks. Yeah.
At least he knows that you're not cheating.
Well, yeah, that's true. Okay, that's...
It's not recorded.
Okay, that's so far so good. Okay, this is... takes a little while to get going because it, but then, okay, 11 seconds. So that's, a worthwhile improvement. Not that great, but anyway, I've thought about trying to do it full screen, but it will take a little bit longer. Let's just try it anyway. If we do this one full screen, I'll let it run. I'll let it do one pass, and then just stop it at that point. I've changed the color scheme, by the way. That the default is to use random colors, but I thought that was a bit ugly, so I've changed the default color scheme just to use shades of blue because I thought that was a bit nicer appearance. But it doesn't change the computation at all. Okay, so that's 37 seconds to do one quarter of the work. So let's try this one. Again, it takes a little bit of time to get going because it's kind of sending out requests to multiple servers. What happens is there's actually four machines in London that I set up before I left, each running two copies of the server. But one of them died, so I think there's only seven of them running now. But it's sending out requests, and each server is doing a block of 10 vertical lines at a time. So it's like a slice of 10 pixels. So 42 seconds. I forgot how much the. Anyway, it's a good bit faster than the non-distributed version. So let's go back to here. Oh, sorry. Thought I'd started again. Come on, wake up. Okay. So this is broadly speaking what's happening here. The blue over at the side is this little laptop. It's talking to an instance of Redis, which is running on AWS, Amazon Web Services, actually in a data center in Ireland, and the servers that I've set up on various machines in London are talking to that. So messages are being relayed back and forward through Redis, acting as a kind of communication medium in the middle. And that means that the client over here doesn't need to know where all these are, or even how many servers there are. It just knows that it's asking for a particular service, and these servers just know that they're serving commands of a particular type. They don't need to know where they're coming from. Okay, so let's go on. This is the main part of the server side of the program. What I did was I just took the existing Mandelbrot set program that's on the wiki and took the kind of compute-intensive part that actually generates the image data, which is about 20, 30 lines, and I just stripped that out and put it into a procedure called Slice, which I haven't shown the internals of Slice because it doesn't really matter, but it has a load of parameters to say what's the scale of the image and where it starts and stops and so on. And then this bit down here is call into the little distributed tickle library that I've created, which says connect to Redis. Here is just a name for a connection to Redis, which has already been set up. That's done using a library called Retcl, R-E-T-C-L, which is created by a guy called Pietro Cerutti, which is a very neat little library. So given that connection, make a request to a service called MAND. Listen for requests to a service called MAND. And when you receive one, call this procedure doMAND to process it. So doMAND is up here and looks at what it gets. And this one supports several different functions. Slice is the main one, which calls that procedure up there, which does its job and then returns back whatever it generates. This one actually generates a GIF image, so that's what gets sent back. And then, just as a demonstration, I've put in there's a square function, which just takes whatever you give it and does the numerical square of that value, assuming it's a number. And then there's a hello, which just gives you back a message telling you process ID and host name and operating system. Now that obviously is going to be different for whatever server it runs on. So that's really just put in for demonstration purposes. Now the previous ones have an extra argument which says seconds to keep, And that's telling the Redis server how long it makes sense to keep this value, to keep it in its cache. So that if it's requested again, it's there. It doesn't have to be recomputed, but you don't want to keep it forever. But this one here, it doesn't make any sense to cache it because it's going to be different based on which server replies. And if you get something that doesn't fit any of these, then you just complain. So let me go back to the actual demonstration here. Okay. So this is a little demonstration client program which just connects to one of those services, sends it a request, and prints what it gets back. So it just loads in the distical code, also loads in this Redis cloud file is to set up the Redis connection. That has the credentials in it, which I'm not supposed to pass on to anybody else because it's a well, that would be against their terms and conditions, and then just does a distical get to that through that Redis instance to a service called mand, and just passes it whatever got passed in on the command line. So if I call that and pass it, say, square. Whoop. Actually, let me just run that, yeah. And it'll just say, okay. Oh, it's gone. The connection's gone again. Oh, bugger. Pardon me, sorry.
The thing is, if you're not sending something, then it's getting closed.
Oh, God. Do I need to click? Yeah, it's. Yeah, right. Okay, let's try that again. So we still get an error message, but now we're getting an error message that came out of the script. It says, don't know how to squash. And notice that was an error that was thrown in the script on the server side, but it gets trapped and passed back and then reported on the client side. So if I actually send that sensibly and say square 22, okay, I get a sensible result back. If I send it again, you can't actually see this, but it won't actually recompute it. It'll just pull it out of the cache again. In theory, I could send a slice command from here, but it would be difficult to get all the parameters right, and what you would get back would just be a binary chunk of a GIF file, which wouldn't be very helpful. So I'm going to try doing the hello command. Okay, and it tells you hello from process blah blah on this machine running Windows NT. And if I keep running this, the way the requests get distributed is that the servers ask for the next request that's available. And the one that's been waiting longest gets it. So if you keep sending the same thing and it's not cached, it will just it will cycle around the servers that are available. So if I keep doing this, I'll get, okay, that's a Linux machine. That's the same Windows NT machine, but same, well, Windows machine, not really NT, but it's a different process. So that's, again, we're back to the same one. Dev2. Okay, and that is a different Windows machine. And that is a different Linux machine. And if you keep going, it'll start cycling back to the same ones. Okay, right, let's go back to the presentation before I completely run out of time. Okay. I thought I could resume this in the middle, but anyway, I didn't. Okay, that's the client program. Okay, so a little bit about what Redis is, which I'm using in the middle of this. Some of you are probably familiar with it, but it's a kind of a database system, but basically runs in memory, and you access it over the network. It can also write stuff to disk, but it doesn't do so immediately. It does so generally after a bit of a delay. So that the it's sometimes described as a data structure server, because rather than the sort of traditional database tables, it provides various data structures, which are kind of similar to what Tickle has, and it kind of matches quite neatly with Tickle, and then, which is not surprising because the guy who wrote it started off by doing a prototype in Tickle and then rewriting it in C once he'd figured out what exactly he wanted to do. And there's been some disagreements about the license recently, but I won't spend time on that. It's a NoSQL database, yeah, okay. So the way that Distical organizes things is you have a name for a service, implemented by one or more server processes and accessed by one or more client processes. And the Redis instance sits in the middle and relays the messages between these. I'm just going to skip on a bit because I'm running out of time. Okay, this is a rough image of what's actually happening inside the Redis server. So you've got clients here. Queues here are actually what Redis calls lists, but you can use them as queues with some of the operations that are available. The main thing is you can have a blocking read from a list which sits and waits until there's something available if there's nothing there. And that's what the servers use to pull the next request that becomes available on the queue. So the clients send requests into a queue that corresponds to one particular service. Servers pick them up, they send requests, they send responses back to queues that correspond to the requests, which the clients then pick up when they're available. And they also write stuff which can be cached into separate cache entries in the database so that the next time a client comes along, it can look, check, is the thing already in the cache? If so, then we don't need to bother the servers about it. Right, so I think I've said all that stuff. Okay, one other point which is relevant to the demonstration, which is that if you write a program which is going to make loads of requests, the kind of straightforward way that you write it is you just have a loop and you say, get me this thing, get me this thing, get me this thing. But when you do that, it doesn't matter how many servers you've got available. You send one request, you wait for the reply to that request, and then you send the next request. So you can only ever have one request which is being worked on at a time, so you can't take any advantage of the parallelism that you've got with all these servers. So what I'm doing to get around that is I also have a prefetch operation. So the idea is at the start you can say, I know I'm going to need this and this and this and this. So you send off requests for all the things that you know you're going to need as a prefetch. So the servers can start work on those, and they just write the results into the cache. But the client has requested these things, but it doesn't wait for the results. It just fires and forgets the requests. And then it starts sequentially asking for the result I need, and I'm going to take this and put it on the screen, and then the next one. But by the time it gets to the point of asking for the specific results, a lot of them will already be in the cache. So they can come back fairly quickly. And that's what's happening in the Mandelbrot demo. It starts off by requesting the whole thing so all of the servers can get busy and start working on it, and then it goes through sequentially asking for each strip of the image in sequence. Okay, I think I'm running out of time, so I should probably pack up. Yeah. Right.
Colin McLeod. Your questions, please. Andreas, a questioning machine.
Okay, so if one client requests some computation costly calculation and first server accepts it, so the first client just makes a prefetch, and then a second client comes and makes the prefetch for the same task. Will this also be cached? Will they be combined and wait together for the same result?
There is actually a check to say, is one server already working on this job? And if that's the case, then it adds an extra entry to the response queue saying that when this result is ready, you need to notify not just the original client, but this client as well. Yeah, so that does handle that, yeah.
Gustav?
Just a short remark. I mean, many of the things you're doing is also available in the Navi server infrastructure. You have the caching, you have timeouts there, you can use. You can have this handling of duplicated cache entries for waiting for the results. You can write asynchronous requests to some servers, get information back. I mean, if you have time or leisure, just maybe look at this or write me an email. It's just might be interesting to look at, because you get rid of Redis more or less, I think, and you have the pure tickle world. And from this point of view, I think it's
maybe
fun to look at.
Sure.
Any further questions? Okay, Stefan?
Okay, so there's one question in the chat room. Arjen Markus and Mark Janssen, they experimented back in the days with a similar setup using tuple spaces, and they used SQLite, so to say, as the Redis part in this architecture. Okay. Do you have any experience, any lessons learned using this setup, like SQLite tuple spaces, or compare it to the Redis setup?
I wasn't aware of that, I'm not. Google Spaces, you said?
Tuple Spaces.
Ah, tuple Spaces, oh, I see. Okay, yeah, well, SQLite, well, yeah, I guess you could do similar stuff like that, yeah, quite possibly. I'm not sure what the trade-offs would be, really.
Okay.
I think the trade-off would be that you have file access to the database file altogether.
Well, that's true, yes, it wouldn't be... Yeah.
So that's not the case here.
Just one question. Why? We saw that the latency was pretty good with the hello example and with the square example, but what caused the large latency for the Mandelbrot set? Was it just because it generates the whole image? Or... all the scan lines, basically?
Well, it starts by sending out requests for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Perhaps not. That's not the absolute best way, but it takes a bit of time just to send out all the requests, and then the servers start working on them. So you only get anything back when at least one of the servers... Well, actually... In fact, it depends on which server picks up the very first strip, because that's the first one you actually ask for. Mm-hmm. So until that one is ready, you're not actually going to get anything on the screen. So if it happened that first request got picked up by a relatively slow server, then it could be slower to start up, but then it will kind of catch up afterwards.
Okay, so because of the round robin system, it can happen that you get a slow server and then it takes longer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It could be. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks, Colin.
Okay.
Yeah. So.